ring of bells as the cups get passed around. Ching, ching, ching. It's kind of sweet. So we're looking at another parable this morning. We will be looking at parables for the next couple of months. God's stories, aren't they? They're God's stories. Stories that God told in the form of parables to encourage people to think, to reflect, to not just stand objectively and judge what Jesus might be saying, but somehow find themselves subjectively involved in what he's saying. Very clever. My parable, the one I'm going to do this morning, will follow on from the one I did a couple of weeks ago, which was the parable of, well, it's called the sower, but I'd prefer to call it the four soils, because it's more about the soils than it is about the sower, I think. And so this parable follows on from that. Now, I also mentioned in Pastor Salt, those who read it, that I was having some trouble with it and got a couple of, a few responses, some help from people who thought that the problem I might have is X, Y, or Z, which was really interesting. It's lovely. What I found interesting about it was none of the queries they had anything to do with the problem I was having, which in a sense was illustrative of the great thing about these parables is they speak to us personally, don't they? If there is, in a sense, a parable that has a core truth to it, nevertheless, it speaks in many, many voices depending on who you are and where you're at when you come to the parable, and I found that really quite interesting. So I'm going to read the parable and the explanation that Jesus gives, and then I'm going to ask you what you think the problem is. So now you can either try and enter into my head and imagine what I might have a problem with, and if you've heard me talking about this during the week, you actually have to clam up, because I've already told you what I think the problem is. But you tell me what you think the problem is. What is it? So then we know what your problem is. Right? Okay. He put another parable before them. This is Matthew 13:24. He put another parable before them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field." So it's already a different story to the previous one where the sower sowed in all sorts of soils. This man sowed good seed in his field. Not on the path, not among rocks or thorns, in his field. But while his men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared also. And the servants of the master of the house came to him and said, "Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have weeds?" He said to them, "An enemy has done this." So the servants said to him, "Then do you want us to go and gather them?" But he said, "No, lest in gathering the weeds you root up the wheat along with them. Let them both grow together until the harvest. And at harvest time I will tell the reapers, 'Gather the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" There's another parable that follows that in a short interlude. And then they go into the house with the disciples. Jesus and the disciples together in the house in verse 36. And his disciples ask him, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field." And this is what Jesus says. "The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed is the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are gathered and burned with fire, so will it be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all lawbreakers and throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears, let him hear." Tell me, what's up with this? Why not get rid of the weeds when they first appear? There's an answer in the parable. Lest you root up the wheat. Did you have a problem? No. Are you just itching your face? Then that's your problem, an itchy face. A cheeky son, yeah. Anyone? I mean, I have you at a major disadvantage because I've studied this and you've only just heard it. However, you were encouraged to read it, so if you haven't read it, then be that on your head.
It says, they, that is weeds, are going to complain to high heaven, but nobody is going to listen. And it occurred to me that's a problem, because I thought God listens to all who are in need.
Okay. So your issue with this in the interpretation using the message suggests or has in its story a people, the weeds who are rooted out and thrown into the fire and who are complaining to heaven and God's not listening. Now shouldn't God be listening to those who complain?
And also that they are complaining. But why should they be complaining? Because they're getting their just desserts.
Right, and why complain if you're just getting your just desserts? Okay. Marshall.
It's a bit heavy on predestination because it's God who sent the right people in and someone else sent the others.
Yep.
It's not our usual idea that all people can be saved.
Yeah, it is heavy on predestination. There are good people and there are bad people, and that's just the way it is. And all the good people are perfect and all the bad people are perfectly bad. And at the end of the time, they'll just be separated, and all the perfectly good people will go to heaven, and all the perfectly bad people will be judged. That's the interpretation. Now, I tell you what, here's my problem with it. Either Jesus got it, the parable wrong, or he got the interpretation wrong. Or Matthew put words in Jesus' mouth. Or it's a really cunning teaching device that Jesus is doing. Absolutely. He who has ears, that's excellent. And when he says that, what is he saying? Yeah. So when he says that, he's saying, "You wake up." He's saying, take notice. Now, he's given an explanation. He's made it really simple, apparently. So then, we don't need to do much with that. He's told us. But when he gives a parable and he says, he who has ears, let him listen, he is challenging you to think and to probe. So here's what went through my mind when I was reading this parable and the interpretation, thinking, I've got a problem here, and here's my problem. Jesus, when he interprets this, he uses an allegorical method, right? So the farm is not a farm at all, and the seeds are not seed at all, and the field is not a field at all. There are other things. And the harvesters, they're not just harvesters. And the harvest time is not simply, well, what happens every season for farmers. It's something else. So it's a coded message, and yet he is trying to encourage people to think about his parables, and yet he gives an allegory that you could never possibly get unless he told you. So how are you supposed to think the parable through if he holds the key? And if he's holding the key to this parable, where are the servants of the master? Right? The parable is heavy on the servants speaking to the master about what's going on here. The interpretation Jesus gives ignores them completely. So if Mark Budenberg was here, I'd ask him, if he set the parable as a study or a test for his students and said, right, think about this parable and tell me what you think it means, and they gave the interpretation, his first question would be, well, you've missed a lot of the parable out. Jesus told the parable. He talked about these servants. Who are they in the story? If the interpretation is all about the reapers, which are just a passing thought in the parable, how on earth are you supposed to make sense of this? Who normally could read that parable and hope to get what Jesus got out of it? So that's what I mean. So either Jesus told a parable that didn't quite fit the message he wanted to make, because he talked about these servants and this discussion that went on in the parable, and then completely ignored them when he gave the interpretation. Or the interpretation itself is either another parable and not really exactly about the parable he just told. I want to move you on a little bit more. Or it's a classic Matthean kind of idea about the ends of the age. He's always talking about the wheat and the weeds and the sheep and the goats. He's always separating people out and killing some and saving a few others. I mean, that's Matthew's gospel, right? You don't get that in John. So it's quite a Matthew flavor. So you see my problem, right? I can either ignore the fact that these two things are quite different and just toe the line and keep my job. Or I can say publicly, before the elders and everyone else, Jesus either got the parable wrong or the interpretation wrong, or option 3, 4, or 5, Matthew did something funny, or Jesus is using this interpretation to cause further tension. So I'm going to go with that one. Now you're shaking your head because you think you know, but you can tell me later. No? Yes? No? Oh, you did. You just. Yeah. Okay. That might be true. A ringing in my ear. Is it too loud? Yes. Listen and say what? Yes. What's your point? Right. Well. A ringing in the ears. Very metaphorical. The tension between these two things, for me, was very creative. Very creative, because it forced me to look a lot more at that parable. Because I just couldn't square it up with interpretation. Now, I think what Jesus says as far as the ends of the earth and when what happens at the end is absolutely legitimate. There's nothing wrong with what he said. I don't think that at the end of the age, in a sense, there isn't going to be some sort of separation and well, you're going to get what you deserve, in a sense. I don't have a problem with that. I just think, well, you didn't need to tell a parable for that. And everybody knew that. That's common knowledge. So you don't need to tell a parable to say that. Everyone knows this. There's an enemy. There are good people and there are bad people. Bad people are going to get their just desserts. Judgment day, right? But the parable, if it's about, if the farmer genuinely is right when he says, if I root up the weeds, I'll take the wheat with it. Do you think that's true of evil people and evil things in this world? Do you think if you took Hitler out of the world, we would be worse off? Like we would rip good people out with him? If you took the spirit of envy out of this world, do you think good people would be harmed by that? Do you think the world would be worse off by removing hate, violence? That's what the parable says, right? That's like the key point of the parable. If I take these weeds out, I'll rip out wheat as well, because the roots are bound together. So I can't take evil and good out. I can't take evil out exclusively. I'll rip out good at the same time. And yet it makes no sense of Judgment Day, because clearly he's going to do that. Clearly he's going to say, all that is evil and causing strife, I'm going to remove and will no longer be part of my good creation. Judgment Day is all about his ability to do that, to separate the wheat and the weeds. And if he can't do that, then why can't he do that now? Is God limited in some way in that sense? So if we're going to lean into the interpretation, it doesn't make sense of the parable and its main point. If it's about, well, only at the end of time can I separate these things, it doesn't make any sense, because we know evil is only ever bad, and it doesn't need to coexist with good for good to be okay. Is this making sense? Like, his interpretation doesn't fit his parable. And the parable is really, really good. The parable is excellent. The parable is fruitful for us to reflect on. So the farmer, what if he's just a farmer? What if the parable isn't really fundamentally an allegory? What if the farmer's a farmer who has a field? And he sows wheat, that seed in that field, because he's expecting to get wheat. And then, lo and behold, he has an enemy. This farmer, for some reason, he has an enemy. We don't know why the farmer has an enemy. I mean, how many farmers have enemies? I mean, what kind of community is this that a farmer has an enemy who is willing to sow weeds in his wheat field? All right, I mean, just imagine that this is normal people listening to a normal story. Not this is a weighty, religious, spiritual preaching sermon thing at the moment. Just imagine it's just a story that Jesus is telling to people who would understand, oh, well, farmers have fields and they sow good wheat in it. And possibly quite a wealthy farmer because he's got servants who happen to be, well, presumably looking over this field. And again, if you were just a normal Jew listening to Jesus tell the story, you'd be thinking, why are the servants watching this field? I mean, what are they looking for? It's not like sheep and wolves, right? I mean, shepherds oversee their flock because there are predators. Farmers don't stand there watching the fields waiting for wheat to grow. Go and do something useful. What? Isn't there another parable Jesus tells? There's a farmer who sows wheat, and whether he's awake or asleep, the seed grows, right? That's another parable Jesus tells, i.e., you don't have to stand around waiting for the wheat to grow. You don't have to stand there. You don't have to put your servants in the field to go, just watch that field, watch for the wheat. And now if they were there for the enemy, he didn't tell them that was the purpose, because they come to the farmer when the wheat starts coming and say, there's weeds in your field. How did that happen? You sowed good seed, right? And he says, yeah, well, I've got an enemy. Well, that would have been a useful piece of information to tell us while we were watching your field. We might not have fallen asleep. Because let's face it, watching paint dry or grass grow is boring. And in the middle of the night, if you've got no reason to stay awake, what do? You go to sleep. And of course, the farmer's not grumpy with his servants, is he? Not in the parable. Not a nary word of rebuke. What doesn't make any sense? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you sure? Yeah. Weeds grow because in good fields, everything grows. Yeah. Absolutely. But let's just imagine that there's more than the usual amount of weeds in this case. Enough for the servants to remark on it. For every piece of wheat, there's a weed. And certainly if you looked at a major maize field or something, it's mostly maize, isn't it? You wouldn't see weeds. There are weeds in there, but you wouldn't see them as much. So there's enough to remark on it. And it's surprising and news to them that their master, this farmer, has an enemy. I mean, like I say, what farmer and who has an enemy? Who was so motivated to get up in the middle of the night and go through his field sowing weeds? I mean, it's becoming a little farcical. The farmer has an enemy. An enemy of his wheat. And he's coming in the middle of the night to sow some weeds. Now, if you were a real enemy, you would either grub up his seed and ruin this crop, or you would sow salt or something. You wouldn't just be a nuisance. This enemy is nothing more than an annoying prankster. Why? Because the farmer says, it's fine. Look, the wheat's going to grow, and we'll sort it out at the end. Is the farmer concerned at all? Do you think God is concerned about evil? Now, that should be an easy question. Do you think God is concerned about evil? Do you think that evil is destructive? It's the one thing that's tearing apart our communities, our societies, our world. Yes. Do you think he's sitting back going, look, that's fine. Let it all happen. I'm all good. The weeds won't affect the wheat at all. They're growing fine. The wheat's not a problem. The weeds are not a problem. Is that the problem of evil as we know it and as we understand God knows it? No. So again, the interpretation Jesus gives is baffling. Because he calls the enemy the devil. And I think he's bad. I think he's more than a nuisance. I think he's a blight and all that he does destroys wheat. Seeks to, anyway. And I think as well that this notion that the seed is are the sons and they turn into to wheat that are perfectly good and the weeds are perfectly bad and they will be separated, and I don't think it really tells a story that is true of our own lives. Now, you and I, we're saints of the kingdom of God. According to Paul, according to the work of Jesus Christ in our lives, we're saints. Destined to be received into God's kingdom at our death and living in his kingdom now. Who here is perfect? That also probably is an easy question. No one here is perfect. The notion that there is just pure wheat and pure weeds, and they are you and I, we're the perfect, pure ones, and at the end there's just the perfectly bad ones, doesn't actually make sense of our lives and of the thing that we're facing. But if I said, maybe you and I, we have wheat and weeds in our lives. Maybe in this community we call the church, there is good stuff growing and there are some weeds here as well. Maybe if I said in the community and in the nation, there are good things happening and there are some not so good things happening. You would go, yeah, I get that. I understand that. And if I also said to you, you know, I bet you could agree with me that there are times when you see some things that aren't so good, but you know that if you overreact and try and make it good, you might do more bad than good in that circumstance, right? Let's say, as a classic example, and I remember this in Easter camp many moons ago, one of the leaders of the camp standing up and making a statement about the kinds of people who smoke that made me feel sick. And they said, we don't want you on site, you have to go all the way over out there to... And I thought, you are ripping up weeds and killing the wheat. What a ridiculous thing to do. Do I think smoking is good for the health? Not at all. Can someone smoke and go to heaven? Of course. Of course they can. No one here is going to get into heaven sinless. Except for the record Christ has and says of you. We're all going to go into there with our weeds, whether we like it or not. That, I think you can agree, makes more sense of the parable than what Jesus said. But I wouldn't have got to that point had I not gone, there's a really discordant note between these two. There's a bunch of things missing in what Jesus said. And the thrust of his message and the interpretation is very different, though related to what he said in his parable. Here's where it relates. There are some things in your life that you may wish you could get rid of, that you feel ashamed about. There are some things in your life, some habits that you have, some ways that you think, some ways that you treat people, that you are ashamed of, and rightly so, because they're not good. That's true of me too, of course. That in this field, if I am a field and you are a field and we are a field, God has sown only good. I think John and Peter both say in their letters, there is a seed of God in us and it cannot sin. It cannot sin. Did you know that? There is a part of you, part of your nature, that cannot sin. But alongside that is a bunch of things that can sin. Alongside that wheat that is growing in us, each one of us and in our community, alongside this wonderful, beautiful, pure wheat that is growing in us is a bunch of weeds. And while the previous parable focused on get rid of anything that would be an obstacle to that thing growing, this next parable moves us along a little with some wisdom about, yeah, but when you see the wheat growing, don't panic about the weeds that grow with it, because that wheat and those weeds can coexist. That wheat that's in you, the good things that are happening in your life, the part of your life that actually is growing in God, will not be destroyed by the things in your life that you feel are not aligning with God. And this takes a lot of personal reflection and interpretation, because as I said, God is implacably against evil. implacably. He will root out of us at some point that stuff that is destroying us, the self-destructive habits and the habits we have of hurting others. He will get rid of those things in time. But he is wise and loving and good, and he knows that in our life, in this world, we will have struggles. We will have things in our lives that we wish we didn't have, and he's going to allow them. He's going to allow them. Just as he allows those weeds to grow among the wheat, and he says to his servants, okay, so some of them are there because you were a little sleepy. You know, kind of like what I was when I first came to the parable and then got to the interpretation and thought, whoa, hang on, wake up. Something's funny is going on here. He is going to allow those weeds in our lives for our good. Do you remember Paul? Do you remember Paul? Good guy, wasn't he? I reckon he'd be annoying. Like, so brilliant and so focused and so hardcore. He'd be exhausting to be with, I think. So driven. Probably an A-type charismatic personality that just everyone else was like, oh, Paul, would you just relax? Build a tent or something. Just chill out, man. And when he discovered a weed in his life, and we don't know what he says, a thorn in his flesh, he called it. Which sounds to me a bit like a weed, doesn't it? A thorn in his flesh. And there's like tomes of scholarly ink penned on what on earth is that thorn. Now, no one thinks it's a true thorn, right? No one's going, oh yeah, he was clipping the roses and got a thorn in his flesh and started praying about it. It's a metaphor. Something was plaguing him, aggravating him. And if you ever had a thorn in your flesh, you know it's not a pleasant experience. You can never forget about it. It constantly aggravates. And he prayed 3 times, which is to say, with persistence, remove this thorn. And God said, my grace is sufficient for you. And then he said, my strength is perfected in your weakness. So here we are wanting to be good Christians. And one of the messages that God is going to say to us, and it says in this parable, if you want to be a good Christian, then you're going to have to put up with the weeds, because I will grow strong in you as you do that. You will have an affliction, a thing in your life you wish wasn't there, and possibly more than a few. And if you really want to get rid of them, maybe some of them will be dealt with, but there's always going to be some. You're not going to get rid of them all. And a bunch of them are there so that you can learn to rely on me. Because guess what? We don't get into heaven by our own strength. We don't get into heaven by our own perfect record. We do have a pure wheat growing in us. And I think the notion of absolute evil, what's Calvin's term? Like, there's no one who's good. I can't square with that, because there's this idea of this perfect seed of sinless purity growing in us because of God. But alongside that is all these weeds. And we have to trust him. We have to trust him. Because if we didn't have weeds, we'd become really cocky, wouldn't we? And unfortunately, I think you probably would agree with me as well, that the church over the years has had a sad reputation for pogroms, for ripping out weeds, trying to clean up the church that has ended up causing more damage than it's ever done good, causing a huge amount of heartache. The church is full of weeds as much as it is full of wheat. And we need to accept that too. If you look at another church and it looks greener, it might be the weeds you're looking at. Who could say? But certainly if you go there, it'll be just like the place you left. Maybe louder. Maybe a more charismatic preacher or whatever. But it'll still be full of weeds. You won't have transferred from a good place or from a bad place to a good place. You'll have just transferred your field. So let's have grace toward one another too, right? Let's have grace toward one another as Paul again would say, in fact, let me read that 1 Corinthians 13, his wonderful poem on love, and we'll conclude with that. Problem with this thing is a bit slow. Because I think he sums that really well. Oops. All right, here we go. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Why? For love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. That's the wheat. And it can put up with the weeds. Let me conclude with a prayer. And unless anyone wants to make any comments, I know we're not too far out of time. Anyone want to make an observation before I pray? Am I fired? Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So there's the natural tension in your life. Do you focus on the weeds and the things that you feel shouldn't be part of your life? Do you focus on those, or do you focus on the wheat? And how do you do that? A matter of focus. And I think the parable is very healthy reflection in that regard. What does the farmer say to the worried servants? Yeah, Cedric.
The Muslim attitude is to get rid of the weeds.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the Muslim attitude is remove weeds, get rid of the heretics. And the pagans, yeah, and it ends up being quite violent, doesn't it, at its extreme. Marshall.
I had it strongly this week that I don't want my children to be clones of me.
Mm-hmm.
So they go through different experiences to what I went through. But you do want them to be harmonious with you.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they're not right in some way from my point of view at any given time doesn't stop them being my children. Therefore, if they ask, I respond, hopefully in the right way, but loving, kind, what's best for them.
Mm.
And otherwise one drops into a legalism of, I've got to get it right, or I'm going to be judged wrong.
Yeah.
As if that's going to change my position with God. Mm-hmm. I'm still a child of God.
Yeah.
And you treat your children as your children.
Yeah.
Whatever their record, they're still your children.
Yeah.
Develops into what 21st century sees as, I need to be perfect. God's obsessed with me being perfect. He's not. He's got an entire universe to preoccupy himself with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that important. But I am a child of God.
Mm.
And that is not the same as God. It's not a clone of God. But my goodness, you can't imagine what children are going to grow into while they're children.
Mm.
You know, my kids have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
You can't imagine what we are going to be. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. So there's two thoughts there then. One is a father will always love their children, a parent will always love their children, even if they're not always in agreement with some of the things they do. That you are my child is a settled thing, and everything else from there works out as, okay, let's just do this together. The other part you mentioned was, perhaps I would put it, we need to trust the Father of who we'll be becoming, rather than looking at what we are at the moment and going, oh no, look at all the mess that I am. He said, well, okay, but you'll grow up and things will get better, and there will come a time when you will enter into something that I've got prepared for you, whether it be, you know, maturity or adulthood or whatever. Yeah. Cool. Mm. Yeah.
That's the wheat.
Yeah.
And it's a growth thing. So maturity, Christian maturity, if you're talking about like a farm, how do you tell wheat from wheat?
Mm.
Well, the more mature the wheat is, the more obvious the wheat will be as well.
Yeah.
Because it won't mature to the same time.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good. So maturity reveals and helps discern the difference between the two. I mean, I often think of that, you know, the ambition, for instance. Is ambition bad? Is ambition bad? It could be, though, couldn't it? Like, if you were ambitious to the point that you were going to get things your way, it could be a terrible thing. But if you were ambitious as far as, I want to do only what the Father tells me to do, if that was your ambition, it'd be a wonderful trait to have. So do you root out if someone's ambition, even if at one point in their life it looks like it's been misused? Or do you say, well, it's wonderful to have ambition, but for what? Maturity, discernment, and thinking things through in a little less kind of black and white, as the interpretation tended to be, a little more subtle, I think, is where Jesus wants us to be. Discerning is a good word, I think.
Some of the naughtiest kids in the Bible were stoned, really upset the teacher. They sometimes come to faith in Christ and then they look up their teacher 10, 20 years later.
Yeah. Yes. Right. You're right. So Tui just sharing a story of some of the naughtier kids in the class causing great grief for their teacher, who then, with Bible in schools, a seed sown in their lives, and however it was that they turned to Christ, and then came and found their teacher later, 20 years on, and said sorry. I mean, wow. The weed becomes a wheat. Wow.
And you read that time and time again, people are in real pain.
Yeah.
And through that form,
yep,
it's done something.
Yeah.
And it also reminds me, it's not just Muslims that try to root out the weak, because a lot of people, lovely people out there, good people, better.
Yeah.
And they just pick on one particular fault in their life and they try to eradicate it.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's sad to see the agony that they go through.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah, I hope it does lead to reflection, because as you said, there needs discernment, there needs to be wisdom, there needs to be a wise community actually to help people work that one out, because we are often our worst critics. We do pick up our own faults and obsess about them. As you were saying, Judy, what do you do? Do you obsess about your faults and become paralyzed by them? Or, as you're saying, Dad, do you become so laissez-faire about them and go, well, I'm a thief and a liar and a murderer, but who cares? God loves me. It's all good. I'll just carry on. No, that's not what we mean here. So it takes discernment. It takes wisdom. And that's what I love about parables. Yeah, there's a heart to them, but learning to have that heart of the parable work on your own heart, that's the trick. That's the work. That's the Spirit's work in our lives. And no amount of great teaching can do that. I don't replace the Spirit of God, obviously. Well, statement of the obvious. You're so lucky to have me. Sure, right.
Just hasn't, you know. And we use Sunday school parables to kids because they're nice stories. Mm. They'll grasp this. And I don't know. I mean, and they do get something from it. And of course, they've now got the basis from which to move further at some point in time. But although we're coming this way here, there are other ways to God, aren't there? I mean, in the way that the Old Testament stories were given, you were just given a story and people absorbed the story about Noah's Ark and so on, and that was it. And somehow, because the story is in your life and stays in your life from childhood, it's part of the value system in your life that you don't really ever attend to. It's just part of you. So that you can actually get something from Scripture just by knowing it, in a sense, without understanding it. It's like good company, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. Or a good seed.
We've had this parable with us for decades, many of us. It's been good company. It hasn't spoken to me in that way.
Right.
And that's great. Terrific, you know. And yet it's still benefited,
although I didn't have
that bit of it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a living word.
Yeah.
Not a static one. Let me bless us and release us, and if there's more conversation to be had, feel free. Mai hoa koe e menaki, mana koe e tiaki. Mai hoa e mea ki a tia tona mata ki a koe. Mana hoki koe e atefai. Mai hoa tona ka nohe e whakara ki a koe. Mana anō e tukuturanga marie e ki a koe. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May he lift his countenance upon you and bring you peace. Amen. Keep the conversation alive. If you are a newcomer, we have a newcomer's lunch next Sunday. Thank you for those who have said they are coming.